Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Welcome back to the last hour. Caden has effectively kept me between the navigational beacons for 3 hours. We're going to see if we can wreck it in the last one. This is Scott Aspenlighter in hosting for Aaron Flint today. And this hour, I'm grateful and honored to have one of my friends and a guy that I respect the heck out of, Blake Furman, in studio with me to talk about veteran issues in our community and in our state, frankly. Blake leads the Veterans Navigation Network here based in Billings. And Blake, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love talking with guys like you who are leading the way in the veteran space and helping honor those who have sacrificed for our country, helping them come back to our communities and helping them get their feet underneath them to create a stable base in our communities when they land back home. So Blake, why don't you tell us a little bit about Veterans Navigation Network, kind of where it started and what the mission of Veteran VNN is.
Yeah, I mean, the mission is really around creating that smooth transition for military service members from, you know, the service to civilian life. And how we came to be is really out of my own transition out of the military, which didn't go too hot. A lot of issues. I had 3 deployments in Afghanistan with the Ranger Regiment. On those deployments, lost a lot of good friends. And because of that, throw in a divorce, a fractured back from a parachute injury, and just kind of fell apart a little bit at the end of my service. And that, you know, carried on over to the civilian world and didn't really know what to do with my life. I mean, I'd lost my sense of purpose, lost the camaraderie that I had grown to love more than a lot of my family. And just that transition didn't go too well for me. And so I just wanted to make sure once I figured my own life out that no other veteran had the had to go through that transition, through those challenges alone like I did.
That's great. And as such, VNN was born.
Yeah.
And Veterans Navigation Network is doing a lot of great things. And in full transparency, you know, I'm blessed to have a couple veterans on my team, and I've had them in various roles. But I've got 2 Marines that have worked with you. You helped my guys that have come out of the enlistment and into the civilian world, just navigate their benefits, you know, help them figure out how to work through the VA nonsense and the touch that you've given those guys to help them get the benefits that they've earned is so impactful. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're really going to dive into what VNN is doing and the work that Blake's doing for our community and for veterans in the state of Montana. And so back after this, this is Montana Talks.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Welcome back. This is Scott Aspenlighter in for Aaron Flint, and I'm joined in studio with good friend Blake Furman. And Blake, we were talking about Veterans Navigation Network, kind of how it started, how you created this nonprofit and what the goal is and kind of what it was born out of your own, you know, your own struggles and trials and tribulations and the heart for giving to make sure that your fellow service members didn't have to do the same things and experience the same things that you had to experience. One of the things that that has always amazed me about Veterans Navigation Network is that it really started from your kitchen table.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like that same, you know, startup business conversation. You hear those stories about starting a business out of your garage or whatever. Like, you started a nonprofit to make impact in the veteran community out of your own house, yeah, out of your home, mm-hmm, volunteering your time, didn't have full-time staff, had part-time staff, were doing it on your own without pay, just helping other people try to navigate the system. And now you've grown into a full nonprofit organization with staff. It's now your full-time job to lead this organization. You're doing a hell of a job doing that. Why don't you tell us about kind of some of the core missions of VNN now that you've kind of grown to where you are over the last 5 years?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so two of the big challenges that I had getting out was VA disability. So I fractured my back, I mentioned when I was kind of doing the intro there. And it took me 3 years to convince the VA of that. And part of that was because I didn't know what I didn't know. And so I was trying to do some stuff on my own that I really should have had a veteran service officer helping with. It was 7 years before anybody suggested, you know, you should maybe go talk to somebody about what you experienced and maybe work on your drinking a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And so through that, resource navigation has really become kind of one of our biggest focuses. And so connecting people to, you know, we're not going to be the SME, the subject matter expert in every single thing. And we don't frankly want to be. There's so much out there for people and resources out there, but we want to make sure we have the right person to connect them to, and not just here's a 1-800 number, but here's the person that you can talk to that can actually help with whatever it is, whether it's starting your own business, getting your benefits, you know, anything that comes up, we want to connect you with the right person that can help with that. And so resource navigation is really our bread and butter. It's our main thing that we do. And it's really just connecting to those who do, you know, serve in whatever capacity, healthcare, yeah, or anything.
Yeah.
And then one of our other big pieces, and this is where a lot of vets can give back of their time if they want to their fellow service members, is our peer mentor program. And so it's other veterans who've gotten out, found success, and they want to volunteer. You know, it could be 1 hour a month. It could be, you know, 10 hours a month. We'll give you a full-time unpaid job if you want as a volunteer. But really just want to share their success with their fellow vets. And so we've got some amazing, we've got everything from, you know, E5s, sergeants in the military to, you know, retired colonels, sergeant majors that serve as peer mentors and have gotten out, done, found success in the civilian sector and just want to share that success with, you know, setting goals, helping people to achieve those goals and removing barriers to those.
Yeah, and that's such important work, and I think it's something that I never served. You know, my father and grandfather were in the National Guard. Neither one of them ever had to deploy. But guys like you that enlisted and served our country for multiple tours, and especially that deployed, you know, it's so hard for us on the civilian side and in the private sector to understand that transition. And it took me a long time too. Like I didn't understand fully. Well, yeah, okay, go get a job. Like get a job, and that's a new, you know, that's a new task for you. You know, go get a job, and now you got a new purpose, and you're going to go do your job just like we do our job. I know it was so hard for me to understand until I spent significant time with guys like you and guys like Brian Gilman, who leads Warriors in Quiet Waters out of Bozeman, to really understand that purpose and the bond of our enlisted members, and the impact that has when it goes away. Mm-hmm. You know, the most any of us in the civilian side ever understand is, you know, being on a football team or being on a basketball team, right? You know, and that, like, that's such like juvenile comparison to what you're, mm-hmm, what you guys experience as enlisted members. But maybe you can speak to some of the struggle that enlisted folks have when they come back out, yeah, into the civilian side with that sense of purpose.
Yeah, I think it's whether somebody never had a deployment overseas or whether they had you know, multiple deployments, that camaraderie, I mean, you're just sharing. I mean, think of, like, you know, you brought up sports, and so you're doing two-a-days and football practice and stuff. And I think during those trainings, like, you bond with those people just because you're going through the suck together, and now just multiply by that every single day for, you know, 6 months for basic training, or for, you know, 6 month or 12 month or 18 month deployment. I mean, you're in that kind of environment where it's just sucky every single day.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're doing it together.
Yeah. We're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some of the issues facing Montana. You know, veterans in Montana, some of the things that we can be asking our local legislators and our governor to work on as we head into the next legislative session. But this is, you're listening to Montana Talks. We'll be right back.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, quick one coming back. So you're listening to Montana Talks. This is Scott Aspenlighter sitting in for Aaron Flint, as Flint has some time off and taking a break away. So fortunate to continue our conversation in studio with Blake Furman from Veterans Navigation Network here in Billings. Blake and I were talking about just the transition of military veterans out of enlistment into the civilian side of things, and some of the core work that VNN is doing in our communities and in Montana to help veterans just navigate the resource path to get their benefits, to get back into finding the assistance that they need and connecting them with the people that they need to talk to. But one of the things that I'm always interested to talk to guys in the veteran service organizations realm about is, what can we do better in Montana? And we can talk about that from a private sector standpoint, how we in the private sector can better help our veterans that are coming back home and transitioning out. But I want to start by talking about what are some of the challenges you see at the state level with, you know, things that could be impacted by our governor and by our legislators, those folks that are listening across the state of Montana?
Yeah, I think there's two big things that I would like to see just in the legislature coming up. And we saw a little bit of it in this previous one, but, you know, Montana's number one for suicide for veterans in the country per capita. Which is a race that we never want to win, but we've been winning or placing in the top three for the last, you know, nearly 40 years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, last legislation, there was some work done on Senate Bill 95, and it actually passed, but there was no funding attached to it. So it really was a resolution of, you know, we're going to do something about veteran suicide, but not really, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking a state as big as Montana, where it takes you 4 hours to get to the nearest VA clinic if you're in, you know, Fort Peck.
Culbertson.
Yeah.
I grew up.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, it's something that is going to need some money behind it. I get there's other people, but I mean, 10% of our state is made up of veterans. And when you add family members who live with them, now we're talking closer to 30% of our state that lives in a veteran household. And so I think that's something worth putting a little bit of money behind, especially when we see these veterans, whether they're Vietnam era veterans or are returning global war and terror vets, we're seeing them kill themselves at an alarming rate. And I think our state should do something about it.
Yeah, and when you talk about resources, I mean, obviously that equates to tax dollars and appropriation of dollars. And you referenced Senate Bill 93, which essentially, from my understanding, and jump in and kind of steer me here.
95.
Sorry. Yeah. Senate Bill 95. See, I hit the ditch already. Senate Bill 95 essentially talked about dedicating resources and a commitment to veteran suicide and addressing veteran suicide and on a big scale.
Right.
The goal with that, when it started, was to create some pilot programs, right, to help connect vets to the VA, to help get them rides to their appointments, to help with their mental health, and really putting some resources behind that to assist. Now, can you get, kind of go in a little bit of detail?
Yeah, it was, it kind of started out originally, the bill was looking for $600,000 of reoccurring funds for exactly kind of what you mentioned, just kind of some pilot programs, something to just see what we can do to try to make an impact with this number, because, you know, it's not going to change overnight. And some of those would be, you know, state-hosted funds that they would grant out to organizations, or, you know, projects that would try to make a difference in that in suicide rate number. And by the time it actually got to the governor's desk, it was for $300,000 one time, basically as a demonstration, you know. Yep. And then, like I mentioned, it ended up being unfunded after it was signed into law. So it's, I think it's a good start. But when, again, you're talking the state, the size of Montana, as big as it is, and a lot of people on the East Coast, you know, have no idea when you're talking about, you know, it takes 4 hours, like we were talking, to get to an appointment. $300,000, you know, probably isn't going to cover it for just the veteran population. If you look at, like, the suicide prevention, we've got two suicide prevention coordinators that cover the entire state. So it's something that I think we ought to just look at adding some more resources to.
Yeah, and I think that's the challenge. And for us in the private sector and the voting public, I think as you talk to your legislators, that's one of the things we got to talk to them about. I mean, we talk about mental health on a lot of different levels here in Montana, and that's been something that we've discussed in recent history. Mental health and mental stability in our veteran community, the statistics and the numbers prove it out. And we have to start stepping up and being committed to actually putting money and resources behind that. I mean, we've had record surpluses in the state of Montana for the last couple of sessions. This isn't about, you know, we're struggling to make ends meet in Montana. You know, we set aside slush funds in all kinds of different pockets with hundreds of millions of dollars, right? And these are, you know, supposed to be the basis for starting trusts for housing and things like that. And this thing, if you talk to Joe Bag of Donuts on the street, this thing, veteran suicide and supporting our veteran community with their mental health and their health and happiness. This thing, if you went to the coffee shop in Culbertson and asked them, hey, do you want the state of Montana and your legislators and your governor to put money into a housing trust fund? Or do you want them to support veterans and set up a sustainable system to try to reduce veteran suicide in our state? The answer would be unanimous across the state of Montana, but somehow we have not held our elected officials accountable. And you don't have to say that because you're navigating this. I can say it. We owe it to our men and women of the service age in to do better. Mm-hmm. And the governor owes it to those men and women who have served our country to do better. And the Department of Military Affairs in Helena owes it to our veteran community to do better. I know Senator Yakovitch right here in Billings worked a lot on Senate Bill 95 with you. Have you had those conversations with other legislators coming up, and kind of what's your hope as we head into the next legislative cycle for that issue in particular?
Yeah, I mean, so the Department of Public Health and Human Services has used to be called the Governor's Challenge, and every state participates in the Governor's Challenge, but it's and some of them are funded, some of them are not.
Montana is not, by the way.
Montana is not. And there's a few states that are not. The ones that are better funded in their Governor's Challenges also seem to be the ones that also have lower veteran suicide rates. Whether there's a correlation or not, you know, don't know, but it seems to be. So there's a couple proposals that have been sent to different legislatures, been sent to, you know, governor's office, you know, Department of Public Health and Human Services around funding what is now called Montana Warriors Forward, really around some of those, you know, state-led initiatives around any veteran suicide, or at least getting us down to, I'd be happy if in the next 5 years we're out of the top five.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be an improvement over the last 40 years.
Yeah.
And so I mean, that's part of that. But, I mean, the proposals are there. The ideas to make some of the changes are there. Mm-hmm. It's just getting the resources to make them happen.
And, yeah.
And they're not, I mean, like you mentioned, there's money out there that could go to this. It's just a matter of getting it designated for this initiative.
Yeah, it's I mean, I'll call it what it should be. It's about making priorities, mm-hmm. and putting priorities in the right place. I would challenge our legislators to do better. Mm-hmm. We owe better to those that have served our country, and I challenge our governor to do better on this. Everybody wants to talk about supporting veterans, and it's a popular position to take, and I don't doubt that most or all do. But when push comes to shove, and it's time to appropriate money to show it, not just say it, but to show it, like, this is how we show it.
Yeah.
Yes. Easy to say, harder to do.
Yeah, so much easier to just say thank you for your service and
right.
head on out the door, you know, or, you know, buy a cup of coffee. I mean, mm-hmm. those are little things that I think veterans appreciate, but when, you know, my friends that I served with are dying at actually a much higher rate by suicide than we did on 20 years of combat operations mm-hmm. in Afghanistan and Iraq, you know, I think we could do better, like yeah. I said. And, you know, Montana being... I mean, I think Montana's a great state. I love living here. I'm a conservative. I believe wholeheartedly in financial stewardship and, you know, making sure that the tax dollars are going where they're needed. But we also, yeah, like you said, can do better with this initiative. I mean, we're one of, I believe, four states in the entire country that tax military retirement.
Which is also crazy to me.
Yeah, to be in a red state, really conservative state. I mean, really, you would think those are things anybody could get behind, not mm-hmm. just conservatives. But, you know, it's just weird.
These are things I think, in fairness to a lot of legislators, I guarantee you if you called a handful of our Montana legislators and told them that, hey, we're taxing military benefits and we're one of four states that still does, the other 46 do not, you'd find somebody very quickly to sponsor a bill and to carry that bill forward. And I hope we see one. You know, Representative Schomer does some amazing stuff here out of Billings and is a great advocate. And I'm certainly happy to help. But those are the things that... You know, we have to do better. Taxing military benefits, it's not just about the revenue or taxing what they've earned. It's also making us less competitive to pull those super talented people into right. the state of Montana. I mean, they can choose where they go. And if that's the last straw, like I can pay taxes on my benefits or I can live in a state where I don't have to, guess what I'm going to do? All things equal, I'm not going to come to Montana. And those are the people we want in our communities. Those are the leaders we want. Those are the people we want come to our businesses. We're going to take another quick break here, and then we're going to come back with Blake Furman from the Veteran Navigation Network. This is Montana Talks.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
The White House's $12 billion Farmer Bridge Assistance Program is earning praise from farmers growing crops like wheat, barley, and pulses that qualify for $11 billion of the funding. But specialty crop growers, including fruit, vegetable, and tree nut producers, are disappointed to be left out. USDA says $1 billion has been reserved for specialty and other crops, though how it will be distributed is still unclear. Cam Quarles is CEO for the National Potato Council, and he warns that turning that promise into real support could prove complicated.
Specialty crops potentially could get a share of that $1 billion, certainly not going to get all of it. It's our understanding each individual commodity under the specialty crop banner, as well as anyone else, is going to have to make their case to USDA on why they need relief.
Quarles said the $11 billion for program crops is justified, but that there's simply not enough funding to support specialty and other crops being impacted by the trade disputes and the state of the farm economy.
When you think of $11 billion, it's a down payment on what is going to be necessary, given the gravity that the overall kind of all-encompassing nature of this crisis that everyone is facing.
The Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance says that funding is important for all sectors of agriculture and all crops need to be represented. I'm Lane Nordblond.
Local small
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right. Welcome back. This is Scott Aspinler sitting in for Aaron Flint, a little deeper voiced version of Aaron. I like to call myself the Barry White version of Aaron Flint on Montana Talks. But fortunate to have Blake Furman from Veteran Navigation Network in studio with me today. And Blake and I have known each other for a couple of years. I can't even remember where the crossover happened that we met. Honestly, it was around a COVID time and VNN and but very fortunate for the friendship and the relationship I do have with Blake and the great work that he's doing for our veteran community here in Billings, Yellowstone County, and around the state of Montana, and frankly even in northern Wyoming, where you guys are stretching and working. So last segment, Blake, we talked a little bit about some of the things that we need to see movement on from Helena, state issues, things that we need to see from our legislators and our governor. Let's talk about some of the successes that you've had and that you've seen and some of the things that have been happening that have been really, really great to see here for our veteran community. And then we can talk about where private sector folks like myself and others listening can help out.
Right. Yeah, I think, we were talking right before the last break about that military retirement and people deciding to move here or not move here because of, you know, that being kind of the last straw between, you know, you've got two states that are equal and everything else, but one appears to serve veterans a little bit more than, say, Montana with our tax military retirement. But what we're missing out on are a lot of those successes, and thankfully we've got some vets that are maybe from Montana or whatever decided that you know, tax wasn't the deal breaker for them and have ended up here. And so we've seen veterans who are starting. I mean, look at our national representatives. I mean, we've got Senator Sheehy. We've got, you know, Congressman Downing, both veterans and leading our state.
Congressman Zinke as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, can't forget him over in Missouri.
West,
you know?
Yeah, the west side, yeah.
So, I mean, we've got three of our four, you know, major representatives who are veterans and leading the way in our representation of Montana. We've got, you know, businesses. I mean, the rate of businesses and entrepreneurship in the veteran community is significantly higher and oftentimes last longer. You know, you see a lot of businesses come and go, but if you can put a veteran behind that business, a lot of times it does succeed. Probably because the veterans used to, you know, sucking it up and pushing through when it's hard, and not to say that the civilian sector can't run a business or anything. It's just proven to be more successful with a veteran at the helm, and so we've just seen a lot of that coming out of the veterans that we've gotten the opportunity to work with, where we might, you know, see them when they're at their lowest, unhoused, you know, addiction, you know, paying the price for their service to our country. And, you know, 5 years later, they're running a successful business here in Montana. So those are the kind of successes that we want to see more of. And that's why we do a lot of Vet Connect events is what we call them. But it's events where veterans can just come together in that camaraderie and meet each other again. So we've got one coming up here in Billings, December 20th, a holiday party for veterans, which sounds like, oh, it's just a party, it's a fun time. But we've seen so many great relationships and businesses actually start out of our Vet Connect events that it's pretty amazing. I mean, two people end up talking about something they are passionate about, and they're like, well, let's start a business together.
Yeah.
And then we've got in February, which I'm hoping to see a lot of the listeners at, is our Veteran and Community Expo. And really what that is, bringing all those service providers under one roof that can help veterans with, you know, any number of things, whether it's starting their own business, their benefits, healthcare enrollment, any of that. But we're actually adding a employer fair to it this year. And so we're looking for 30 employers that, no kidding, want to hire veterans, which will obviously be a help to the vet, but I think it's going to be a huge help to the employers as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you bring that up, because we, in the first hour, had the Montana Stock Growers Association on. And the Stock Growers Association is holding a labor symposium to talk about the labor shortages and the labor challenges in the cattle industry. And I can tell you that labor issue is something that spans all sectors of business right now. It's a challenge everywhere, and it's something that we've all got to try to figure out. On a personal level, I will tell my story. I think I've told it one time before. One of the things that Blake helped me out with my civil engineering firm was I wanted to try to find how to connect with the veteran community and hire. We had had veterans that had come through back through the GI Bill and we'd hired them on and had them on our staff periodically over the course of my business. And the perspective that they bring, the attitude that they bring, and the leadership that they bring to a business is different. It's hard to explain. It's different. And they bring something to a business that you can't really find in a kid that's just coming out of school, right? And so Blake helped connect me with the Department of Defense Skill Bridge program. Great program that nobody knows about. Yeah. Nobody knows about it. So I use the Skill Bridge program. The Skill Bridge basically takes guys in the last 2 to 12 months of their enlisted period and helps place them in a job. Department of Defense pays their salary. I mean, they're paid their wage from their rank, 40 hours a week. Benefits are paid. It costs the business nothing, absolutely nothing. What it cost me was hiring a Skill Bridge navigator, Leif Ibsen. Yeah, guy out of Miles City, to help me figure that system out, because I was never going to be able to navigate the Department of Defense's systems, and Leif did a phenomenal job in getting me through that and helping me find a guy that we inevitably hired, Ryan Barber, phenomenal member of our team, Marine that came to us, didn't know anything about civil engineering. And Craig and I leaned into that and brought him into the system and thought, you know, we can take the intangibles that these guys have and teach them how to do technician work and skilled work in our industry. They don't have to have a civil engineering degree. We can figure this out. Ryan brought his friend after he got out of the enlistment. We didn't hire him through SkillBridge, but we just hired him straight out of his enlistment. So we've had two people now come from that SkillBridge connection, and both of them are valuable members of our team and doing really great things inside our business. And that's just one of the things. That was just a conversation between you and I. Right. A couple different questions, a couple different times, and then you pointing me in a direction. But it's landed two veterans on my small business here in Billings.
Well, and the really cool thing about that program is, I mean, at the end of the 2 or 12 months, you know, you could have decided, no, you're not a good fit for the team. You need to basically try them out. It's almost like a paid internship, except somebody else is paying it. Right. And, you know, I think the cool thing about veterans, too, is, you know, you might have a business and not have the ability to offer education benefits or anything like that, but veterans oftentimes come with those benefits because of their service. And so you could allow them time to get the engineering degree while they're working for you if you're hiring for the culture and the skills rather than the education piece, because they've gotten a different education. You know, I just remember my perspective when I went to college after the service of, you know, I'm with a bunch of 18, 19-year-olds who are worried about the newest phone or you know, like their perspective, I think, was okay for where they were at in life. But my perspective was I had just, you know, come from a place where people are living in complete, like, we think we have poverty here. Like, Afghanistan was a different level of complete and utter poverty, and some of them didn't even know it. And then you have people, just terrible atrocities happening to kids and things like that. And so, I mean, my perspective was very different because of that. And also leading people through those situations that you're not going to find, you know, in a high school program or even a college program in many cases.
Yeah. And I think that's just one of the wonderful things that VNN does, Veteran Navigation Network does in our community and any small business that's thinking about labor and staffing challenges and those types of things. You know, I'd encourage you to reach out and find Blake. Blake, where can people find you at?
Yeah, veteransnavigation.org. Give me a call, 406-698-5448.
Yeah, and reach out about this Veteran and Community Expo coming up in February. That's a great opportunity. Even if you're not going to be able to be there, reach out and support it by sponsoring the event as a private sector business. Do your part to help our veterans. We're going to take another quick break, come back for our last segment. This is Montana Talks.
You know.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, welcome back for the last segment. This is Scott Aspenletter sitting in for the great Aaron Flint. Appreciate the opportunity to sit in today and steer the great ship Montana Talks. Last segment, we've had some really great conversations with Blake Furman with Veterans Navigation Network about some of the things that that you're seeing, and as we head into the new year, outside of the legislation, what are some of the things that private business can do to help an organization like yours? What are some of the things that you see the interface between veterans transitioning out and the private sector?
I think reaching out to us about education for themselves. We offer some online training in partnership with a program called Psych Armor that includes some military culture training. So, I mean, it basically allows you to have a conversation with a veteran and know a little bit about maybe what they experienced, but also some of the terms they might use and things mm-hmm. like that. So, I mean, that military culture education, I think, can be really valuable. I briefly mentioned some of the education benefits, but there's so many more veteran benefits out there. And I think as an employer, you could hire a veteran that's been out 5 years or a year or, mm-hmm. just got out, or it might be 20 or 30 years that has never accessed their benefits. And if you connected with like an organization like Veterans Navigation Network or, the Montana Veterans Affairs Division or whatever to... Mm-hmm. do an in-service for your business or something for your current employees, for your HR department, so that they're just aware of some of those benefits. Imagine being the veteran who's been out 5 years, maybe struggling financially, coming to work for your organization, and you're the one who introduces them to income that could, increase their income to mm-hmm. $4,000 a month. I mean, it can be really significant, or connects them to their education benefits where they're able to move up to a higher level job or whatever. I mean, imagine the loyalty that would buy for your company. And then mm-hmm. you give them, the time. You let them go for their 3 hours of appointments to get their disability benefits. And don't cause a stink over it. Just mm-hmm. let them go, or let them go to their mental health appointment. The hour yeah. a month or hour a week or whatever it is that you're losing there, you're going to get back in retention and frankly, performance, because yeah. they're able to focus on what's, the mental health, those things that are important, and come back and be focused on their work when they're back.
Yeah. And I'd encourage you made some really great points there, and I'd encourage, employers and leaders in organizations, don't assume that veterans that work for you are connected.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. don't assume that they do have access to all their benefits. Guy that worked for me, he retired out of the Air Force and went back, got his college degree through the GI Bill, worked for us for 2 years. So he'd been out of the service for 7. The only thing that he had accessed is his GI Bill benefits to go back to college. And didn't access any of the other benefits until he came and talked to you
yeah.
at VNN. And Brandon Angel, who unfortunately we lost him, he went back to move back home to Michigan, but was a phenomenal guy in our business and made a definite impact. But there's a guy that accessed a part of it and knew that there were more, but he just didn't want to deal with it. He didn't want to try to navigate, figure that out on his own. And it wasn't until your organization created a platform to help him figure that out that he accessed his full benefits package. So as employers, I think it's important to know also what resources are out there for us to help point our people to. And who in our community and who in the VSO community can really help our people. You know, our team members are our family in performance engineering. We're blessed to have all of them. I love every one of them. They allow me to come do things like this. You know, I'm able to go screw off for 4 hours on the radio talking about nonsensical things and hashing it up with my friends. As employers, we owe it to our people, and particularly if you have, you're fortunate enough to have veterans working in your organization, man, don't assume things. It's hard not to, it's hard to insert yourself, but don't assume that those resources are just known, because oftentimes they're not.
Yeah, well, and laws are constantly changing, like we were talking about, and so a veteran's not necessarily going to know when those laws change, and so we see a ton of Vietnam-era vets who still have not, you know, they've got three different types of cancer due to the Agent Orange they were exposed to, and nobody's ever told them to go file a claim or that there's other resources outside the VA that can help with some of the things they're dealing with, like, and even resources in the VA that they might not know about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible, and that's why in Billings and Yellowstone County we're blessed to have Veteran Navigation Network here. You had mentioned we got 30 seconds here left. Let us know how people can find you again, and then where they can find your next events.
Yeah, veteransnavigation.org. If you go on there, you can find out about the navigator training, which I mentioned, the cultural training, that's where that is, suicide prevention training. Also, all of our events are posted under there, under community events. And if you've got an event for veterans that could benefit them, you can actually post it on there yourself as well.
That's awesome. Blake, thanks a bunch for the effort and the work that you do and the dedication to the veteran community and our local communities in the state of Montana. Folks, that's a wrap for today. I kept it between the navigational beacons. I didn't roll it in the ditch. This is Scott Aspenlender. I'm grateful to be with you. This is Montana Talks. We'll see you tomorrow.